Okay, so today we're going to talk about Rosh Hashanah. Seeing as tonight is Rosh Hashanah, we're going to talk about Rosh Hashanah. The way we're going to do it is the first Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah says that there are in fact 4 points of the year defined as Rosh Hashanah. In fact, the Bryce and Gemara goes on to list even more times of the year to consider Rosh Hashanah. What we're going to do is go through each of those times that are considered Rosh Hashanah. The one that we colloquially refer to Rosh Hashanah, the one that's tomorrow, in fact, is a Rosh Hashanah for a number of different areas of halacha is considered Rosh Hashanah. So we're going to discuss those as well as the other dates of the year that are considered Rosh Hashanah. Then, in the Be'in section, we're going to focus specifically on one particular Rosh Hashanah, which again is Rosh Hashanah, that one of the elements of Aleph Tishrei is the Yovel year. We're going to focus on that, make a few interesting points on that. And then we'll talk a little bit, very briefly, a little bit on Hashkafa, a little bit about the other Rosh Hashanahs, but primarily focusing on the Rosh Hashanah that is tomorrow. Okay, so the Mishnah lists, again, the Mishnah says there are four times of the year, there are four Rosh Hashanah. The first one is that Nisan is Rosh Hashanah lamalachim v'laragolim. Nisan is Rosh Hashanah for kings and for the regolim. So we'll go through each one in turn. Rosh Hashanah for kings, the Gemara understands that this refers to that the year of a king starts on the 1st of Nisan. Namely, let's suppose a king was crowned on the 20th of Adar, then once he reaches 1st of Nisan, that is Rosh Hashanah l'malachim, that is the beginning of the second year of his reign. The reason why this is significant is because legal documents would have the name of the king written, the date of this happened in X month of the fourth year of the king. You need to know what does it mean the fourth year of the king. Therefore, it is based on Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the beginning of the year. Now, the Gemara says this applies to Jewish king, that Rosh Hashanah, that Nisan is Rosh Hashanah for Jewish kings as opposed to non-Jewish kings, will be the Rosh Hashanah will be Tishrei, and we'll in fact get to that. Now, in terms of the reason why this is so, first of all, the Gemara learns that from Sukkim. However, it's clear that this is taken to be a Takana Derabon and not Deraisa. The Ritva says this quite clearly. One of the examples the Gemara gives is that let's suppose a king is crowned on the 29th of Adar, and then you have and then we say that the first of Nisan is already his second year, because even Yom Echad B'Shana Chos Shana, even one day of the year is considered the year. Now the Ritva points out that's actually Machlokas Tanoim, whether Yom Echad B'Shana Chos Shana. However, the Gemara doesn't think it's Machlokas Tanoim here, and the Ritva explains because here we're only talking about Takana Derabanan. Everyone agrees here that we're in Derabanan Yom Echad B'Shana Chos Shana. Even those people who normally say that one day is not considered the year for a Daraisa, for a Derabanan Yom Echad B'Shana Chos Shana, and he clearly understands this is a Derabanan. Just give me one sec. However, interestingly, the Ran also gives almost a svara somewhat for why it should. So again, if we learn it out from Sukkim, the Ran also says that to an extent it also is a svara that the year of a Jewish king should start from Nisan, because Nisan was the month when we came out of Egypt, and therefore that's when we became a free people. Therefore, essentially, every Jewish king, his reign is only legitimate or only happened because we came out of Egypt. Therefore, it's appropriate for the year of the Jewish king to begin in Nisan, which is when we were formed into a nation, when we became a nation capable of having our own king. Yeah.
Just on the ritual, like, we spent like 2 daf like trying to find out like where this pasuk's from. Like, it was just not smart, like.
However, the Ran bases himself off that. He says because we end up, we try first proving it from Shlomo and then we prove it from the other pesukim. However, then there's that price at the end in Gimel Manalev which summarizes it and it goes through the whole pesukim from Shlomo. The question is, why should it be? And the Ran says because that's teaching that even though it learned out from the second pasuk, the first pasuk taught us that it was a connection to Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's the basis of the king's their reign starts essentially, or only happened because of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, just one interesting side point. There's a question of why do we write on Shtaris Germany? Again, we said that the beginning, you would write the king's the date based on which year of the reign of the king it was, and that starts on this. And we discuss how do we learn it from, where do we learn it from, why is that, etc. Now, why is it that dates on Shtaris are written by the year of the king? So Rashi says, basically, the Gemara, that it's because of Shalom Malchus. It's because of, I believe it's based on the Gemara. It's because of Shalom Mishum, Shalom Malchus, because of kind of peace, to maintain peace with the sovereign, therefore you do this. Now, Tosfos challenges, but if that's true, then that surely that only applies to non-Jewish kings. as into why would it apply here with a Jewish king? And the oracle answers, no, it also applies to Jewish king. There's this concept of Shalom Malchus by a Jewish king. Therefore, this concept of Rashi of Shalom Malchus is the reason why he writes Shtoris by the year of the king, to maintain good relations with the sovereign, and it even applies to Jewish kings. Okay, so that is the first Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the beginning of the year for the reign of kings. That is the first Rosh Hashanah. It is also Rosh Hashanah for Laragolim. Now, the way the Gemara explains is as follows. There is a din of Baal Ta'acher, namely for various different things, primarily Kochim, but also other various obligations. You have to pay, you have to fulfill your obligation by a certain time. If you delay your obligation too long, you're over a lav of Baal Ta'acher, you should not delay to fulfill this obligation. There is a debate, how long is this time period for Baal Ta'acher? So the Gemara understands that what our Mishnah is saying is that, one opinion of the Tanaim is that you have three regalim. Again, regalim is when people would come up to Yerushalayim. Let's suppose most of the chivim we're talking about are karbonis. So let's suppose you had a shlomim. You have three regalim from when you made an edit of a shlomim. You have three regalim within which to pay that. If you don't pay off that, then if you don't do it within them, baal ta'acher. That you've been over baal ta'acher. The Gemara understands that our Mishnah, when it says that Nisan is Rosh Hashanah the regalim, means that is according to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, who says that it's not Baal Ta'acher, is not that you have three regalim in any order. Namely, it has to be three regalim from Rosh Hashanah the regalim, from Nisan, from Pesach. So you have to have in that order Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, and only then you've been over on Baal Ta'acher. Namely, according to Rabbi Shimon, if I made a neder, I don't know, the middle of Rosh Chodesh, on Rosh Hashanah, I made a neder before Sukkot. Now, according to Rabbi Shimon, my count of Baal Ta'acher only starts from Pesach. Namely, I have 6 months all the way through to Pesach. Then I've got Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. Once I've had Sukkot, then I would be over on Baal Ta'acher. As opposed to some of the other opinions who hold Baal Ta'acher is Shaykh, if you have three regalim in any order, therefore you would make a neder on Rosh Hashanah. Then you would have three regalim, Sukkot, Pesach, Shavuot. And after Shavuot, you'd only be over Baal Ta'acher. Therefore, what our Mishnah is saying, according to the Gemara, is that Rosh Hashanah the regalim is, according to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, is basically the Yom Tov Pesach, namely the Yom Tovim, the three Yom Tovim, in order for you to be over on Baal Ta'acher, have to come in order starting from Pesach. Now, just I mentioned briefly that the din of Baal Ta'acher applies primarily to Kochim, but also to other things such as Tzedakah. And the Gemara says that Tzedakah, the rule of three regalim, doesn't apply. And the Ran explains that because the things to do with Kochim have to do with other regalim, seemingly because you're coming to the Beit HaMikdash, therefore it makes sense that it's tied to the Baal Ta'acher is based on X number of regalim. Again, a machloka is exactly how you count those regalim. As opposed to Tzedakah, that's got nothing to do with the Beit HaMikdash, therefore it's nothing to do with regalim, and therefore it has its own framework, its own time frame for Baal Ta'acher, rather than, namely, that in fact it is immediately, if you delay, just immediately you're already over on Baal Ta'acher. If you made a neder to Tzedakah and you delay giving that immediately, there's no regalim, immediately you've been over on Baal Ta'acher. The reason being, according to Ran, that because it's only those things that are to do with the Beit HaMikdash, Kochim, that have this rule of, that are based on the regalim. However, these other things, that's Tzedakah, which is not to do with the Beit HaMikdash, therefore there's no reason for it to be connected to the regalim. Okay, so those are the two Rosh Hashanah. Again, this is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, this is Rosh Hashanah for Melachim, that is for the start of the king's reign. Rosh Hashanah regalim for this in and of Baal Ta'acher. The Gemara adds, based on the Brayza, the Gemara adds 3/4 further things for which Nisan is Rosh Hashanah. First of all, Nisan is the first of the months. Now, what does it mean? It's the first of the month. What's the Nafka Minah? In fact, the Nafka Minah is probably the biggest Nafka Minah, possibly the biggest Nafka Minah of all of the Rosh Hashanah. Pardon?
Can you read the Torah?
What do you mean?
When it references the months.
Exactly. When it says that on the 1st of the 7th month is this, and on the 10th of the 7th month is Yom Kippur, and on the 15th of the 7th month is Sukkot, which is the 7th month, which is the 1st month, that is the Rosh Hashanah for Chodoshim, the Rosh Hashanah to decide which is the 1st month. That is Nisan, namely, when the Torah says, on the 15th of the 1st month you should do this, that's referring to Nisan. When it says 15th of the 7th month, that's referring to Tishrei. It's all based off Nisan. Now, that's the Nafka Minah of having the Rosh Hashanah of the months. Then Hashkavah, we'll discuss now Hashkavah, because later on Hashkavah we'll talk about something different. Why should it be that you have the that Rosh Hashanah for the months. Why should it be the Nisan is the first month? So two reasons are given. The Ramban famously says it's a way of Zechlitzi of Mitzrayim, that you count, you know, that all the months are based off of the Nisan being the first month, Zechlitzi of Mitzrayim. Interestingly, the Ramah says that the reason why it is a more technical reason. Let's suppose we would have Tishri as the first month. So we would then say, if Tishri is the first month, and let's say we wanted to have Pesach, Pesach would be in Nisan, Nisan would be the... except for, if it is, if you've got Adar Sheni, then Pesach will be the 8th. It would be a lot harder to say the Yom Tovim of Pesach and Shavuos if Tishri was the first month, because, or if anything was the first month, because then you've got Adar. Whereas now, if Nisan is the first month and Adar is the extra month, and therefore you never have anything in the Torah, none of the Yom Tovim in the Torah are kind of, their date is pushed off. Their date is sometimes the 7th, sometimes the 8th. It always exactly fits in the Torah. It would have been difficult to give it over had we not had Nisan as the first month. Yeah. Ramban. Yep. The Ramah, it's actually in a Kisve Yad, this incredible, like the Makar is like, I saw it in the Masifta at the back, and kind of the Makar it gives is like in a Ksav printed in this journal in 17 years ago, like whatever, and he's quoting someone else, so like, but it ends up being the Ramah who, the Ramah, not the, that's not the Ramah, other than the Shulchan Aruch. So, yeah, okay. Fine. That's the third thing that Nisan is Rosh Hashanah for. Fourth thing is for Ibra Hashanah, that you can't, interesting, this is called Rosh Hashanah, because what it basically means is you can't do Ibra Hashanah, you can't add the month of Adar. Once you've reached Nisan, you can't add the month of Adar. It's interesting why it's even referred to as Rosh Hashanah. Okay, that's the fourth thing. The fifth...
once you reach Nisan.
Pardon? Once you've had Rosh Chodesh Nisan, you can't then add Adar Sheni. You can't turn Nisan now into Adar Sheni. No, of this year. I mean, what you're saying is, according to the opinion of this writer, all the way until the last day of Adar, you can add a new Adar. Once you reach Nisan, you can't. It's interesting that's referred to as Rosh Hashanah.
Third, yeah.
Third one was the months.
Which is the first month? That was
it. Yes. Yes. Fifth is for the Shkolim. You took a new truma of the Shkolim. You took a new from the money that the Shkolim, which goes to the Korbanos Sibur. You would take new money on Nisan and on the White Korbanos. This is based on a drosha. Rashi explains the drosha is based on Zos Olas Chodesh V'Chodesho L'Chodesh Hashana. We darshan that pasuk as saying you should chadesh, you should renew and bring. From new korbanos, and Rashi explains it as follows: that it says the word chodesh three times, zos olas chodesh b'chodesho lechodshei hashana. So the way he explains it is that there's a month when you need to renew the korban. There's a month. Yeah, there's a chodesh, zos olas chodesh b'chodesho, which you, the second chodesh being which you need to renew b'chodshei hashana. The third one being money, namely, there's a month when you need to renew with new money. That's how we darshan it out. Namely, therefore, we have to, again, it's not ma'akev, but you should, from Nisan, you have to bring new korbanos from the new money. Therefore, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, they would take new money to bring to buy the korban of Sibur. That would also happen on Nisan. Good question? Okay, and finally, the sixth opinion, and it's also interesting that this is, again, referred to as Rosh Hashanah, is that in terms of hiring houses, if you say that I am hiring you this house for this year, then that mistoma means all the way up till Nisan. This year, for in terms of hiring houses, means up till Nisan, because we assume it includes the winter. Again, this is one opinion of Raisa. Some argue this, but this is brought in a Raisa as a potential thing that there is for Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So again, the Mishnah said two things, regarding Malachim and Rabbanim. The Gemara, the Braisa added a further four things: Chadashim, Ibur, Shekolim, and according to some, Stiros Batim. Okay, that is Nisan. Then Elul is going to be short, Tishri is going to be long, and Shvat is going to be short. Okay, then the next Rosh Hashanah is Rosh Chodesh Elul, according to one opinion of Tanoim, is Rosh Hashanah for Maisa Behemoth. Now, this is going to be the Rosh Hashanah for Maisa is going to be something we see also by Tishri, that there is a rule by Maisa that you need to take a tenth of, for Maisa Behemoth, you take a tenth of your animals, Maisa of Dog, you need to take a tenth of your crop. The rule is that you have to take from this year's produce on this year. For example, a little bit similar to the idea, there's a tax year that you have. a year where you pay tax and everything from, in England it's 1st of April, 1st of April to 1st of April, you pay out everything on there, and then anything in the next year is considered the next year and is counted in that Teshuvah. So the year for Maisa, according to this opinion of the Tanaim, the year for Maisa behavior begins on Rosh Chodesh Elul. There is an opinion that it's on Rosh Chodesh Tishri, the same time as the Rosh Hashanah is for Maisa Dagon, but there is one opinion that it is on Rosh Chodesh Elul. Now, the Chazal say that even though the tax year you cannot take from, let's say, before Rosh Chodesh Elul and after Rosh Chodesh Elul, that is, and from one Rosh Chodesh Elul to the next Rosh Chodesh Elul is all considered one year. Nevertheless, Chazal said that you should actually take Maisa Behema a few days before, a few weeks before each of the regalim. Namely, you should separate Maisa Behema before Sukkot, before Pesach, and before Shavuos. The reason being that leads there to be more, once you take mice from it, that makes it more likely people will sell it, and therefore that means there's more animals around for the regalim. Therefore, Chazal say you should separate mice and behemoth at before Yom Tov. Nevertheless, when you're looking at the official legal year, what is considered one year for mice and behemoth, upon when you can't switch over, you can't separate from one year onto the other year, that cutoff point is Rosh Chodesh Elul, according to this opinion, and according to some time on Rosh Chodesh Tishri. Okay, any questions? Cool. Okay, then now we get to Rosh Chodesh Tishri, which is again what we're going to have tomorrow. Okay, the first thing that the Mishnah says about Rosh Chodesh Tishri is that it's Rosh Hashanah Lashonim. It's the Rosh Hashanah for years. Now the question is, what does that mean? There are three opinions in the Gemara. The first is that, like we said by Rosh Hashanah LaMalachim, that for Jewish kings their year starts on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So Rosh Hashanah Lashonim means that for non-Jewish kings their year begins on Rosh Chodesh Tishri. That's the first opinion. Second one is that Rosh Hashanah Lashonim means that was when the world was created, and therefore when we're working out Tekufos, which we're not going to get into, we're working out Tekufos that goes by Tishri. Again, we're not going to get into this because there's a much longer discussion to explain exactly how those work. But basically, to work out the seasons of the year, to work out the Melodos, we would go based on Rosh Chodesh Tishri, but again, we're going to leave Tekufos for the moment. And the third opinion is that Rosh Hashanah Lashonim means that we are judged on the entire year from the beginning of the year. We are judged on what will happen that entire year. Rosh Hashanah Lashonim means that is the start of the year Ladin, namely at the beginning, on that day we are judged what will happen for the rest of the year. That's the third opinion in what Rosh Hashanah Lashonim means. Okay, so that's the first thing that the Aleph Tishri is Rosh Hashanah Lashonim. Then the second thing that Rosh Chodesh Tishri is Rosh Hashanah for is for Shemitah, which again is very practical this year because this year it is Shemitah, it is Rosh Hashanah for Shemitah. Now, as we mentioned in the first shiur that we gave, Shemitah has three aspects to it. It has various Isurim, you can't work the land. It has the Isurim of, it has the status of the fruits that grow in the Shemitah year, and also Shemitah's Ksafim. Now Rashi says that when we say Rosh Hashanah is Rosh Hashanah Shemitah, that means you're not allowed to work the land anymore. It's interesting he doesn't mention the Kedusha of the fruit. That's interesting why it doesn't mention it. But the Gemara says that the Shemitah's Ksafim, the loans being removed, that happens only at the end of the year. Therefore, it's understandable why Rashi doesn't mention it. However, we also mentioned in the first week the major discussion by Shemitah's Ksafim. There is a major machlokas. Is Shemitah's Ksafim, does it happen naturally? Namely, does it just, the loans are annulled, or do you have a positive mitzvah to annul them? The Mordechai is saying that it naturally happens, that it just automatically loans are null and void, as opposed to the Yoreim says that you need to annul it, and the Baal Ha'itzur has a middle opinion. He says that from the first day of Rosh Hashanah, from the beginning of the year, you have a mitzvah to annul the loans, whereas at the end of the year, they're automatically gone. Therefore, according to the Baal Ha'itzur, definitely you can say that Rosh Hashanah the Shemitah means not just for the Avodah Karka, but also for the Shemitah's Ksavim itself. You have a mitzvah to be, you have a mitzvah to say that you're annulling loans already from Rosh Hashanah. Yeah.
Is that machlokes parallel to the disowning land or
no? Parallel to?
Disowning land actively or
not? There is also a machlokes. There is a machlokes. I don't think it's parallel, no. That's Beis Yosef and Mordechai. I don't remember who those, but I don't know if they link up. I'm not sure. Okay. Then, the third thing that it's Rosh Hashanah for is Yovel, and we're going to come back to discuss in Ian's section. But the Yovel, this is Yovel is a little bit more complicated because there is also certain things that only begin at Yom Kippur. Again, the basic rules of Yovel is that Yovel, you're not allowed to work the land, servants go free, and the land has returned to its original owner. However, even though we say that Rosh Hashanah is on the first of Tishri, nevertheless, the servants only go fully free on Yom Kippur. Indeed, there are those who say that the reason why we blow the shofar on Yom Kippur now is zecher to the fact that when there was a Yovel, we would blow the shofar on Yom Kippur, and that would be a sign to send the servants free. Nevertheless, they begin to go free again. It's an interesting discussion of what is exactly the status in the interim periods between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Nevertheless, we consider to some level Rosh Hashanah the first day of Tishri as the Rosh Hashanah for Yovel. Okay. Two more things about Aleph Tishri, and then we'll get to the final Rosh Hashanah Shabbat. The next thing that there is for first of Tishri is Maaseh. Is Lanatia, is for planting, namely that in order to define a tree as Orla, similar to as you said that a king, if he's been ruling for 10 days, then it comes to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, then it's a new year, so too to define the number of years of a tree for Orla, that goes by first of Tishri, that if it's been planted for half a year, but then it reached Rosh Chodesh Tishri, then it's its second year. And a similar thing by Maaseh, this time talking about Maaseh Yarok, Maaseh Dagon, just as we said by Maaseh Behemoth, that's kind of the tax year, or the Maaseh year that you have to separate from within, from produce of within that period. Only that can be separated as Maaseh on things of that period. You can't cross over between years. So the Maaseh Yerek and Maaseh Dagon, the Rosh Hashanah for that is Rosh Chodesh Tishri. That is the beginning and end of the year for Maaseh. Okay, then that's it. We've done three Rosh Hashanah. We've done Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Rosh Chodesh Elul, Rosh Chodesh Tishri, and now we're finally going to do the Rosh Hashanah of Shabbat. We say that Machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, whether it's the first of Shabbat or the 15th of Shabbat, is Rosh Hashanah LeIlonus. And this means that the year, in terms of defining the fruit as both as Netar Avai and also for Maestros, I believe. For those things that have maestros. Also, those things that have maestros, I believe that Tu Bishvat is the cutter for them. Yes. For maestros, either the first of Shabbat or Tu Bishvat is the cutter for the maaseh of fruit that goes by Tu Bishvat. An interesting explanation, though, the reason given for by the Rabbeinu Chanan for why Tu Bishvat is the Gemara says that because Rov Gishmei Shama, you already had most of the rains of the year. And the way Rabbeinu Chanan explains it is that we say in Tarnish that the beginning of the rainy season is Yud Zayin Cheshvan, and the period of the winter ends at Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Between Yud Zayin Cheshvan and Rosh Chodesh Nisan, 15th of Shvat is just like a 15th, between 17th of Cheshvan and 15th of Shvat, you've had just under 3 months. Whereas from 15th of Shvat to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, you have to Rosh Chodesh Iyar, you have 2.5 months. Basically, you've had most of the season. You've had 3 months of the season before it, and 2.5 months of the season coming after it. Therefore, it's all the way through to Rosh Chodesh Iyar, and therefore you've had most of the season 3 months before Tu Bishvat and 2.5 months coming after it. Therefore, that is why Tu Bishvat is what it is. Okay, that is the Bekir section that is running through the different Rosh Hashanah. Now, the point I wanted to make with Iyon is we're going to look at Yovel, but what I want to focus on is always this is a Iyon methodology, or a great way of seeing different methodologies, both kind of styles that we associate with the Rishonim and also the Acharonim. Particularly, Rav Chaim helps you have a great understanding of the kind of the Derech HaLimud and the style of Rav Chaim. So we're going to look at that through looking at Yovel. So, as you mentioned, the Yovel year, a number of things happen in the Yovel year. You don't work the land, servants go free, land returns to its owner. That's what happens in the Yovel year. Now, as people may be aware from experience, Yovel doesn't apply anymore. The reason given in the Gemara Erchin is that we don't have Yovel unless all the Shvatim are living in their ancestral homes and everyone is living in their right place. Namely, even if you have all the... First of all, we don't have all the Jews in Israel. Even if you have all the Jews in Israel, it has to be that the tribe of Reuven is in the plot of Reuven, tribe of Shimon in the plot of Shimon. Until you have that, there is no Yovel, and therefore we don't have Yovel anymore. Okay. Now, the issue is as follows, or a major question that comes up is as follows. There's a machlokas tanoim, Rabbanon and Rabbi Yehuda. How does the Yovel year fit into the cycle of Shemitah? Namely, there's two potential ways you can look at the Yovel year. You could, again, we say that it has every 50 years you have a Yovel, and then you have seven Shemitah cycles followed by a Yovel year. Now, is that Yovel year the first year of the next Shemitah cycle or not? Namely, do we have seven groups of seven, then a 50th year? Start a new cycle, seven groups of seven, then a 50th year. Or do we say that you have seven groups of seven, and the Yovel year is the first of the next series, and basically you'd have 49, and just the Yovel, you have Shemitah year followed by Yovel year, and the Yovel is already the first of the next cycle of seven. Pardon? No, the first one is that you have seven cycles of seven, followed by a Yovel year, followed by the first year of the Shemitah year. After Yovel, you have the first year of the next cycle of seven all the way through. Basically, what ends up happening is that the whole block would end up being 50 years, as opposed to if Yovel is the start of the next Shemitah cycle, you've got 49 years, followed by 49 years. You don't have a block of 50, you have a block of 49. Do you see what I mean? Okay, so the Rabbanon say that the Yovel year is a separate year, that the Yovel year does not count in the cycle of Shemitah. Rabbi Yehuda says that it does count in the cycle of Shemitah. Now, we say, according to the Rabbanon, the Gemara says, according to the Rabbanon, that the Rabbanon would say, even if you don't have Shemitah, you would still count the Yovel, you would still carry on the same cycle. Sorry, even if you don't have the Yovel year, namely, even if we're not keeping the Yovel year, you still have this system that you need to have seven cycles of seven, followed by a 50th year of Yovel year, starting again with a new seven cycles of seven. As in, the Gemara says explicitly that the Rabbanon holds that you continue on this system even if you're not observing the Yovel year. Again, so Rabbi Yehuda says that you, the way a Yovel year works is a Yovel just incorporates and it's just the first year of the Shemitah cycle, as opposed to the Rabbanon who hold that the Yovel is a 50th year, and then only after that the next cycle should start. And that is true even if there is no Yovel year.
How many times do Yovel to Rabbanon?
Pardon? There's no such thing as Yovel to Rabbanon. The reason given by the Shach, the Sma, is that we don't make a gezerah that people won't be able to keep. And to have 2 years in a row without working land is very hard, so it's a gezerah shein that we yachol lamad ba. So we don't have the Yovel to Rabbanon. Now, the issue is as follows, that as people may be aware, we today, the way we do our Shemitah cycles is we just do every seven years of Shemitah, that's how we do it, and that is based on, the Rambam says that there's Masorah of all the Gaonim, and that is what we do. However, that seems to be quite difficult. We just said that according to the Rabbanon, even if there is no Yovel year, you have to, you're moaning Yovelin Lekadei Shemitah. Namely, you still have a 50-year cycle. You still have to count the 50th year as a Yovel year and start the Shemitah cycle after that. You can't just have 7, 7, 7, 7. After 7 groups of 7, you need to have the 50th year, the Yovel year, even if you're not keeping it. But the way you count Shemitahs is based on that there is that 50th year, followed by the next, followed by the beginning of the new Shemitah cycle. That is the opinion of the Rabbanan. Therefore, it seems very difficult, this Masorah of the Gaonim, that we don't do that, and we just have continuous cycle of seven without counting for that missing Yovel year to make it cycles of 50. So what we're going to look at is four different answers to that question, and what we're going to see, and then what we're going to try and show is that the first two is one kind of methodology in Derech HaLimud, which we're going to kind of give a name to or give a kind of a grouping to. The third answer is another type, and the fourth is another type. So, your question? Well, no, but the question is that surely once you know this, you should incorporate it into our counting Shemitahs, should be that after seven Shemitah years, you then have a Yovel year, and then you start counting year number one. Why is it that we just have continuous Shemitah years? We should be counting the Yovel as well. So, the first answer given is that we pass on like Rabbi Yehuda. The Rabbi Yehuda says that even when there was a Yovel, the Yovel is just incorporated in the thing, so it's incorporated, therefore we pass on like Rabbi Yehuda. A second answer that's given by the Ravid, the Meshech Chochma, says that we can, even though I said that Gemara hold, the Gemara says that according to the Chachamim, even when you don't observe the Yovel year, you continue to count the Yovel for the sake of the Shemitahs. However, the Meshech Chochma says that there is a Toras Karnim that says otherwise. The Toras Karnim that says that when you don't have the Yovel year, then you can. Then you, if you're not observing the Yovel year, then you do not count it for the Shemitahs. And therefore, that's the Makar. Even though the Gemara said that when we, even if we're not observing the Yovel, you continue to count cycles of 50. However, he says that the Torah's Kodem, which is clearly what we follow, that you, that when there is no Yovel yet, then we don't count the Yovel, and then we do cycles of 49, and we just continue a cycle of 7. That is the answer of Moshe Chochma. So, and again, we're going to come back to it, we're going to look at those two answers as one kind of group. The third answer is the answer of the... I don't remember who gave it now. The answer of the Ran. The Ran says that this only applies when Shmita is Daraisa. When we have Shmita Daraisa, then you count Yovel and Lekadeh Shmitas. When you have Shmita Darabanan, then you don't count Yovel, Lekadeh Shmitas. That's the answer of the Ran. Then Reb Chaim comes with an absolutely brilliant Kiddush, really amazing Kiddush, and he says the following. The Torah says that there is a mitzvah for with Yovel there's a mitzvah for Beis Din to count every year and to count the 49 years and to count the 50th year, and then there is Yovel. In fact, there's a lot of halachic similarities between that mitzvah and the Sfira of the Yovel and Sfira Omer. In fact, many dinim are learnt out of the Havamina to learn dinim, very similar, just as with Shmita, just as with Sfiras Omer, we count 49 days in the 50th of Shmita. So too, based in the Zachir and based in to count the 49 years and then the 50th is Yovel. Now, Reb Chaim comes with a brilliant Chiddush and he says that it is the Yovel year is so tola on based in that were based in not to count for the Yovel year would not happen. There is no halachic Yovel year. It only happens when based in count. I've even heard people say that this Chiddush of Reb Chaim also applies to Shavuos. Theoretically, were no one in the world to count the 49 days between Pesach and Shavuos, then Shavuos wouldn't happen, because all Shavuos is you count and then you have Shavuos. That's an interesting Chiddush in itself. Again, it's interesting to see whether Reb Chaim would always, whether that's necessarily transferable. Reb Chaim does say, though, by Yovel, that if bases don't count, then there is no Yovel. Therefore, the way Reb Chaim explains his Gemara, he says that when it says that you're moaning Yovel in Lekadeh Shmitas, is that, yeah, but there are only such thing as a Yovel if you've got a Beis Din who's counting it, even though you're not keeping it. Nowadays, if you don't have a Beis Din, there's nothing to talk about. There is no Yovel here. There's no meaning. Nothing happens. If you don't have a Beis Din, there is no Yovel here at all. There's nothing to talk about. Then obviously, there's no significance to the Yovel. Obviously, you just count consecutive Shmitas. Whereas, when the Gemara says that Mon and Yovel and the Kavit Shmitas is that when you have a Beis Din and you can create a Yovel here, even though you can't keep the Yovel here, then you have Mon and Yovel and the Kavit Shmitas. But it doesn't apply when there's no Beis Din, because there is no such thing as a Yovel when there's no Beis Din. That's Reb Chaim's Chiddush. Brilliant Chiddush. Okay, now what I wanted to do is just analyze the difference between these different approaches, and it'll help us particularly understand Reb Chaim, but also understand different approaches in learning. The first approach, which said that, again, the first way of answering it was saying that either we pass on like Rabbi Huda, or that we find another Makar for the, we find another source for the, for this idea, is I would call this kind of very similar to the Derech HaLim often of the Gaonim. Namely, that you have their style, their way of answering questions is often by saying that that based on how we paskin, based on finding a different source, based on finding a different makar, that we will see, particularly by comparison to the others, what the Gaonim, that's a more common Derech of the Gaonim, even though here it happened to be, it was Masha Kochman and everything. But we'll see that we're going to call that Derech HaLim of the Gaonim, and you will see what I mean as we talk about the others. The second approach, that of the Ran, which is saying that no, that only applies to Shmita Daraisa rather than Shmita Darabanan, which basically seeks, rather than seeking to find a source for this din, but rather seeks to make an ukimta in an already existing Gemara, or rather seeks to balance and say that both sources are true, and even though we have this source and we have that source, we make an ukimta, that is a Derech HaLimud primarily of? Who kind of brings that to the table often? I say, whenever you've got a stira, you'll often make an akimta to answer it. Rather than saying there's a machlokas between sugyas, or that we paskin like this and this, rather than saying this sugya paskins like him and this sugya paskins like him, often they'll say, no, actually, it's not that the sugyas are different opinions. The sugyas are the same opinion, but there's an akimta. Who often does that? Pardon? Which version particularly kind of is the paradigm of that? Tosfos, yeah. Tosfos is the one who, rather than the Gaonim would often say, it's a machlokes in the sugyas, or this is Rabbi Huna, this is Rabbi Meir, or this is just a machlokes in the sugyas, and that's just how it is. Whereas Tosfos sometimes does say that, but often Tosfos will say, no, the sugyas agree with each other, but there's an akimta of X, there's an akimta of Y. Again, the Gaonim sometimes will do one, and then Tosfos the other, but Tosfos is definitely famous for making eucalyptus in order to make lascivious fit. And that's somewhat similar here, that you have this stira between the Ga'arim on the one hand and the Gemara on the other hand. So rather than saying, oh no, it's not a stira because it's a different Makar, or we pass it like this. No, they're both true, but we make an eucalyptus in order to work out the stira between them, rather than saying, yes, there's just a disagreement because they follow a different Gemara, because they follow Medrash, etc. So that, again, I would call that the Derech HaLimud. Tosfos, again, here, it's not Tosfos, but as a general Derech HaLimud, that is definitely a direction that Tosfos took more than the Gaonim. The Gaonim would often say this, Machlokes in the Sugyos, this is how he passed, as opposed to Tosfos trying to mishalev between the Sugyos, by often by making Okumtas. Yeah. Pardon? Again, you find all of these in the Gemara. You find them sometimes saying this is like this, this is a psak. And the third type of Derech HaLimud, you can also find an Amorim. And say, but still, again, it's not hard and fast rules that every time the Rishonim see a stira between Sugyos they do this. But definitely, by comparison, the Gaonim are more likely to do that, and Tosfos is more likely than the Gaonim for sure to make an Okimita and make the Sugyos all kind of match up and fit with each other. So again, here you have the Gaonim seeming a stira with the Gemara, rather than saying yes, it's machlokas, but they just because we pass one like them, or we've got different makar. No, you can show that they're both correct. But again, one's talking to rest and one's dropping it. Okay. Now, Rav Chaim, this is the third document, which again, you do see before, but it primarily, the Rav Chaim, and this is what we mean when we talk about the Briska Derech, is primarily this is the way we learn now. It's very rare for us to have in Shir that we'll have a question on the Gemara, and we'll say, because that follows Rabbi Huda, or we know that follows Rabbi Shimon, or we can see that's the right side bottom. That's not really the way we learn so much. Our main Derech HaLimud really stems from Rav Chaim, and Rav Chaim, his idea is the way of answering it is kind of is not by making an Okimta as much as looking for a conceptual definition. Namely, it's not making an Okimta in Yovel, it's just redefining Yovel and looking at how you define Yovel. Other cases, it's not. When you have the classic Rav Chaim Tzvei Dinim, it's not making an Okimta as much as just explaining, no, this is talking about one type of, again, the classic Rav Chaim on Tefillah, this is talking about one din in Tefillah, this is another din in Tefillah. It's showing how it's not an Okimta, it's not saying this is talking about case X, this is talking about case Y, it's redefining the din, it's again analysing the din and kind of coming up with a conceptual definition which answers the question, which shows how it's not a contradiction, which shows how there's not a contradiction between the Gaonim and the Gemara. So it's a in a sense you can call it a finer version of an Okimta, or you can say it's showing how there never was a question. There are different ways of formulating it, but it's a more, again, conceptual and focusing on the definition of the din, again, rather than saying, let's go one to the right, one to the bottom, but it's focusing on the very definition of the din. No, this is a din in this is a din in that. Or here, Yovel, there is no such thing as Yovel. You have to, once you understand what the din of Yovel means, you see that Gemara obviously doesn't apply here because it just is legally meaningless, halachically meaningless in this context. That is very much the definition of Rav Chaim. Again, pages and pages have been written on defining exactly how you define the Briska method and how it's developed, etc. But the basic idea, I think this gives a nice example of you see the difference between the way Rav Chaim answered compared to the Rishonim. Again, we gave names to the various other shittas in terms of their style. I think it's a nice example. You can see clearly the difference between Rav Chaim in terms of his conceptual understanding of the particular concept of the discussion led to an answer to the question, rather than either making a kibbutz or based or saying yes, there's a machlokes between the sugyos. Okay. Any questions on that? Okay. Cool. Finally, we'll just briefly talk a little about Hashkafa. First of all, we'll start from this place. The second Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah says that at 4 points the world is judged. Again, the first four are talking about 4 points considered Rosh Hashanah. It says at 4 points the world is judged. Pesach for grain, Shavuos for fruits, Rosh Hashanah people are judged, and Sukkot we're judged for water. And the Gemara says, where do we seemingly this is the source for it. The Gemara says it as an agadic statement, but some Rishonim understand this is the source of the Mishnah statement, is that because you bring, Hashem says you should bring the Korban of the Omer on Pesach, that's because Pesach is the time you're being judged for the grain. The Torah says you should bring the Shteh Lechem on Shavuos, that's because that is the time you're being judged for fruits. So that's a bit more difficult. The Gemara proves that wheat can be considered as fruit. The Gemara proves that. Then the Gemara, then again, Sukkot is the easy one. The Gemara says you bring Nesach HaMayim because that's when you're judged for water. Rosh Hashanah is a little bit more difficult. Rosh Hashanah, the statement of the Gemara is a little bit less clear in terms of it being a source. However, the Ritva says the source for the fact we're judged on Rosh Hashanah is the Mishnah says that the pasuk Hayotzer Yachad Libam Hamevin Akol Maaseh. That's what the Mishnah says. The Rosh Hashanah we all pass in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu like sheep. It says Hayotzer Yachad Libam Hamevin Akol Maaseh. The Ritva says that what this means is Hayotzer Yachad Libam when He created together their hearts, namely on the day that Hashem created man Hamevin Akol Maaseh. Then He analyzes all of their deeds, then He judges them. Namely, on the day that we were created, this is following the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, that man was created on Rosh Chodesh Tishri rather than Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Therefore, because that on the day that man was created, then Hashem analyzes his actions. Again, by the way, that point about Rosh Hashanah being the day the world was created and Machlokes Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua is a massive Machlokes, which actually, in a sense, runs through both of these Mishnahs. And really, to properly understand both of these Mishnahs, we have to analyze that, but that is a much, much broader, very, very large figure, both in halacha and in machshava. But just to add on one point to this idea of the Ritva, that it's based on the fact that because we were created on Rosh Hashanah, we are judged on Rosh Hashanah. Rav Taragin, I've heard him say, I think, a few times, the idea behind this is as follows. The Rashi on the first pasuk of the Torah says that in the first pasuk of Bereishis, it says that Bereishis bara Elokim, es Hashemayim es Haaretz. Whereas in Perek Beis of Bereishis, it doesn't refer to Elohim, it refers to Elohim, and also says Yud Kei Vav Kei. It also says Hashem in their name. So Rashi says, why is that? Because all of the Machshava HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to create the world to permit us a day that's Elohim. He saw that man wouldn't be able to live up to it. Therefore, Shitei Velov Ruk Midas Rachim, he joined also, as well as the din, there is also Rachim, and therefore man has a chance of existing. So again, the world was supposed to be created. Man was supposed to be created just Midas HaDin. However, it would be impossible, therefore there's also Midas HaRachmim. And the way of Taragin explains it is as follows, that seeing as there's this element of compromise, that when man was created, there had to be some kind of compromise, it's impossible for him to live with Midas HaDin. There has to be this compromise to also allow Rachmim. Therefore, on the day that Hashem made that compromise, Hashem comes back and kind of analyzes, well, was that compromise worth it? Namely, on the day that the deal was made, on the day that Hashem decided, yes, I need to make this concession, and man is not going to manage unless I have joined the Midas HaRachmim. It shouldn't really be like this, but I need to join the Midas HaRachmim. Therefore, on that day that Hashem made that deal, we then need to analyze, well, is this deal working? Namely, was the concession of not creating the world Midas HaDin, is that concession worth it? Is man living up to his obligations that he's now able to do because the world is not created Midas HaDin? That's how Taragin explains this idea of being judged on the day you were created, because built into creation is the fact that there's a certain concession given to man. Therefore, we need to. That is the day when Hashem chooses to judge us. Okay. Okay. And,
I'm recording.